Good morning. Thanks for tuning into your community radio station, KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzek, and I do want to make a correction. Had said in the announcement that we would be discussing Domestic Violence Prevention Month, but actually it is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And joining us this morning, we have Haley Beard. She's with Ketchikan Indian Community, and Erica Paquette with Women in Safe Homes, WISH. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. And it is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. What information, I guess, do you have to get out there at this time of year?
Well, this month we're doing a few events for Sexual Assault Awareness Month. We could also talk about the statistics in Alaska. So I know Alaska has a pretty huge problem with domestic violence and sexual assault. So our rate of rape is 2.5 times the national average, and child sexual abuse, we're about 6 times the national average. So we do the different prevention and awareness activities just to keep that on the forefront. I think a lot of people don't, they know that it's bad, but they don't really realize how many people that are affected by these things. So they say like 75% of Alaskans probably know somebody who's been the victim of domestic violence or sexual assault.
And are you noticing the numbers going up over the years, going down? Is there any trend?
So they've been really pushing prevention in the past 5 years. So we've actually seen a 30% decrease in the amount of adult women who are reporting that they've been sexually assaulted over the past 5 years. So we're heading in the right direction, definitely doing a lot. With different legislative actions. They passed the Aaron's Law, which is going to start in this school year, 2017, where it's mandated that all public school kids have to learn about sexual abuse prevention starting like K through 12. Those kind of things are helping to give people like the tools to talk about it, kids the tools to talk about it, because, our child sexual abuse rates are pretty staggering.
And these statistics, it's people willing to step forward and speak up,
yeah.
However. So any sense of are people speaking about this, or is it something that is still kept behind closed doors?
I think that more people are able to talk about it just through prevention events, that the whole community is acknowledging it, like the Choose Respect March that we have coming up this Thursday. But I think it's important to note, too, that people are brave enough to speak out about sexual assault, but it's difficult, especially when people enter the justice system, because I believe it's only 1% of all perpetrators of sexual assaults ever spend one night in jail.
So I have, this is from RAIN, the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network. So nationally, they say out of every 100 rapes, 32 get reported to the police, 7 lead to an arrest, 3 are referred to prosecution, only 2 lead to felony convictions, and 2 rapists will spend a single day in prison. So I think there's a lot of, one, stigma around it, and then, two, that fear that you're going to put all this effort into it, and then just to see the perpetrator walk free, so...
Yeah, it's funny because you talk about stigma, and at women's group we do this exercise where it's a prosecutor talking to a victim that had been robbed the same way that they would talk to somebody that had been sexually assaulted. And you really see that like black and white comparison of like the stigma around sexual assaults and talking about it, because the prosecutor is like, what do you mean you've given money away for free before?
You know, what were you wearing when the robbery happened?
Yeah.
Had you been drinking?
Yeah, so. But even though the statistics, are staggering and can be overwhelming, I think it's important to remember that that shouldn't stop you from getting out in the community and being seen and letting survivors in our community that might have not come forward yet or might have not talked about it or don't know how to talk about it, just being seen at something like the Choose Respect March lets people know that you are a safe person to come talk to and that there are safe spaces in our community for people to address these issues.
This is a call-in show, so if anyone has questions out there or comments, you can give us a call. The numbers are 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And what are some of the things being done, I guess, to prevent the sexual assault? Are there efforts to...
Yeah, definitely. Like the prevention, being seen in public places, letting people know that there are safe spaces, and educating the community to change our social norms of the fact that it's not about what women wear. It's you teach people not to sexually assault, not to blame the victim for acting a certain way, and, you know, that they were at fault for it in any way, shape, or form. It's violence is always a choice.
Doesn't KIC have a program for teaching respect? Am I correct about that?
Yeah, so we our domestic violence program, we do have a batterers program, and that is not always court mandated, but can be. We have a lot of people that are in there due to custody issues, and so anybody could enroll in it, and it's just for men because typically men and women use violence in different ways. And so this is basically to address the belief system that men have about women.
And how is that program going?
It's going well. So we're kind of always worried about funding being cut because there's not a lot of batterers programs in the state, but we do get referrals from even other communities.
And what other efforts are going on?
So the state has in the Healthy Alaskans 2020 program, one of their goals is to obviously reduce the rate of rapes in our state. So they're focusing on things like helping perpetrators of sexual violence when they're younger. So it's about 50% or more than 50% of perpetrators as adults engage in some sort of sexual violence against another person when they're juveniles. So they're focusing on getting those people early intervention, cognitive behavioral therapy, and things like that. And then there's also a lot of, so it's like sexual assault, sexual violence, child abuse, domestic violence, they all kind of share risk factors with like things like substance abuse and suicide. So there's definitely a lot of work around identifying different risk and protective factors. So like Haley was mentioning, some of the risk factors of being a perpetrator of sexual violence is having like an ideology that men are like entitled to I actually don't know how to say it, but, you know, like having traditional gender-based attitudes, I guess. So working around those things kind of help all of these areas, and then focusing on things that keep kids, like, socially connected, fostering their socio-emotional health, having them be connected to, like, healthy adults and school, and school success as a protective factor too, and then like strengthening, you know, families.
And you mentioned that trying to intervene at an earlier age when there's the first signs of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't those people generally, in most cases, they themselves have been assaulted?
So, yeah, a lot of times we do see it's kind of a generational thing. So people that grow up in unhealthy households, you know, those are the behaviors that they learn and stuff. So that's what we see with a lot of people, you know, a lot of people who as adults, you know, they may have been the victims themselves of violence or violence in the household. And then it's like with the ACEs study. So a lot of those people who are the victim of childhood sexual abuse, they just grow up to, you know, have these thinking patterns that are unhealthy. And then they're also more likely to be suffer from obesity and heart disease and engage in risky behaviors. So it is really a cycle, which is why the move towards prevention. So, you know, they really fund direct services because we need to have the shelters. We need to have the crisis lines. We need to have the SART teams, which is a sexual abuse response team, that would, like, go to the hospital and then support the survivor after they've had a sexual assault. But the state is really trying to move, well, for all the different things, towards prevention, where we're supporting people younger. Like, I'm going to be in Head Start, like, for the next couple weeks, teaching kids, you know, just about, like, body autonomy and how to identify safe adults and how to say no and things like that. So we're really, the younger you can start teaching these kids these skills and then also support the families, 'cause we have a lot of different things that our society does that don't actually, like, help kids practice body safety, like when you say, you know, oh, you have to give this family member a hug. So really teaching kids that their body is their own and that they can say no to hugs, and it doesn't mean that, you know, they don't love the person, they just don't feel like the hug right now, and then that's okay. And then as we get older, you know, teaching those things in an age-appropriate way, moving through to consent, you know, teaching teenagers that we really want to get the verbal yes. So, like, consent is verbal and sober and clear, and really making that the standard. But that's something that we need, like, our whole community to do. Because when we keep kind of teaching kids things like, oh, look at, like, the body language, or, oh, it ruins the moment, you know, it makes it hard for people to go in and really change that culture. So I think we're just working on a lot of different things that are kind of influencing this culture shift.
And it sounds also just picking things that are age appropriate, because obviously you can't teach the same things to a kindergartner or preschooler that you would. But how it sounds like very young age that you're starting with educating kids.
Yeah, so I've done like a few preschool. I have a preschooler myself. And so really just, yeah, teaching them that they don't have to. And, you know, doing that with family members also. Like, you know, oh, don't make your kids sit on the Easter bunny's lap, like, if they don't want to take a picture because they're screaming and crying, like, and that's actually teaching them, you know, that sometimes you're just going to be, like, thrust in this situation with a stranger, and they don't really know how to do that. So we have, like, age-appropriate books. You know, whenever you want to bring in terminology, correct terminology for body parts, it does make it easier for kids to talk about sexual assault or if somebody is touching them. But that's really like a comfort level with the family. So like in my house, we use the correct terminology for body parts. Some people prefer to just use private parts. That's what we use, like when we go in to like talk to preschoolers and kindergartens, just the bathing suit, you know, anything under your bathing suit. But, you know, also trying to remove the stigma from talking to your kids about those things. I think, you know, it's uncomfortable for parents, too, and they don't know how to do it. So just really introducing, like, small concepts with the kids and also the families, reading books or singing songs or just practicing, like, if somebody, you know, touches you, you're going to, like, you know, say no, teaching them to be assertive, because also we teach kids, like, you know, to be kind of, like, quiet and you listen to grown-ups and things like that. But, you know, that there are some situations where you need to be assertive and, like, run away, and then helping them identify those safe adults. So, like, I sit down with my daughter, like, who are some safe adults? You know, she'll list her teachers, her grandparents, her parents, like our friends and things like that. So she knows that she has people to talk to if something happens.
Okay, and a reminder, this is a call-in show. I have a few minutes left if anyone has any questions out there or comments. The number is 225-9655. 1-800-557-5723. And if the PESE parents want to have conversations with their kids, and as you said, they may not know how to do that, where are resources available where they can find these books or find materials?
So, I mean, if you do a kind of a simple Google search, a lot of stuff will come up. You could always call us at WISH in the Education and Prevention Department at 228-4371, and we could help show you some different things that we use. There's also curriculum, so I'm not sure if the school district has picked their curriculum. They'll probably use something like Second Step, which is a longer, like, socio-emotional learning curriculum. So it's really builds on, you know, teaching kids to recognize emotions and starting there, starting you know, for them to understand, like, feelings and emotions. And then, yeah, you bring in these different concepts as they get older, where you're teaching them about safe and unsafe secrets. So I think there's definitely, you know, you can Google, you can call people. And then for older kids, me and Haley are actually going to be doing a thing at the library on the 19th from 6 to 7. Where parents can come with their teenagers or by themselves, where we're going to talk, you know, kind of role play and then talk about things around sexual assault to give parents the skills to talk to their teenagers too, in a way that's appropriate, where we're not trying to teach, you know, our daughters that, like, oh, you know, you can't go out and do this and you shouldn't wear that and things like that, like how to talk to them about safety in a way that's actually, like, shifting the culture to one that protects people instead of, I don't know, blames the victim. So, yeah, the Sexual Assault Awareness Month campaign from one of the national coalitions is, like, every year they do a different one. So this year's, it's engaging new voices. So it's really reaching, you know, trying to reach out to coaches and parents, faith leaders, community members, to change the culture around, like, believing survivors and how we talk about victims of sexual assault and rape, as, like, a society. So.
Okay. And we do have a caller on the line. You'll need your headphones to hear. Okay. And we have Rob. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
And what is your question or comment?
Well, I guess I have a couple of comments. I haven't heard the entire show, so I hope I haven't missed anything. But I'm getting the gist that sexual assault is always has a victim who has zero responsibility. I think you are sending a very, very wrong message to the young ladies in the audience and to the people who parent kids and granddaughters, that they don't have any responsibility in the matter. They do have tremendous responsibility. You're speaking as if the way they dress has nothing to do with their environment, has nothing to do with the eventual outcome of being sexually assaulted. It has everything to do in many, many cases. If a young lady dresses very provocatively, showing off her nakedness in a sexual way, and then goes into a bar or to a party where she knows there's drugs or drinking, she is stepping into a tinderbox. Now, is that to say it's her fault? Well, it's her fault for setting up the tinderbox.
You know, we actually do try to teach people that nobody has the right to touch anybody else's body regardless. So you should be able to walk down the street completely naked and not have to worry about being assaulted.
I respect what you're trying to do is to diminish or hopefully eliminate a sexual assault, but you are being naive when it comes to knowing that provocative dressing does not lead to sexual assault. In many cases, it does, and also the environment. If she goes to a party where there's drunkenness and drugs and she's provocatively dressed, that's a tinderbox.
That's, you know, it's, I think this is where we're, again, like, we're trying to move away from victim blaming. So we're going to focus on what the perpetrators are doing. So, you know, starting when we're young, mm-hmm. teaching people that nobody has the right to touch any other person is really the standard that we're going through. I don't think that we're naive. We spend a lot of time reading the data behind these things and researching. I mean, I spend all day trying
to. And working with women and men and children about these things that we really want to step away from the victim blaming, but also, you know, that we are allowed to feel safe in the world that we live in, that we don't have to be scared when we go out, that we're allowed to dress how we want and be who we are as a person. I see where you are coming from, but
may I suggest that your organization could go in both directions at the same time, educate people on how to dress with modesty. Educate them about the environment.
We actually practice this thing called
going to a party where there's drinking and drugs with sex-crazed 18 to 20-year-olds. I mean, that's a big issue, and you are ignoring it as best as I can tell. So in that regard, you are being naive, and I think the adult listeners to this radio program will agree with me. You can go in both directions. I'm not saying what you're teaching is wrong. I'm just saying the other half you are not focusing on, and you should.
So we definitely teach personal safety with a lot of people. So, you know, we do different classes with middle schoolers where we're teaching them about situational awareness. So being aware when you're out walking, you know, and looking around. And then also, yeah, recognizing when you're at parties and things like that. Maybe when things start to escalate, what are safe times to leave? But we're really looking at it from the fact that we know teenagers and young adults and young people are going to engage in, you know, going out to the bar or going to parties and things like that. So really focusing on ways to keep people safe. And then also, like, we practice empowerment-based advocacy, which is letting people make their own decisions for their for what they feel is best for them. So.
And when if you go out and drink, you know, it's going to lower your inhibitions. You're going to make poor decisions, whether that be around who you're choosing to engage with socially or, you know, your safety. So we do education around drugs, alcohol.
Okay. And Rob, thanks for your input. We do have some other callers on the line, and your thoughts are out there. So I believe we have another caller.
Okay.
And again, joining us, we have Victoria, who... Hello, Victoria, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was very interested in that man's comments, and I agree with him totally. I am the mother of two sons, and they lived in a house in Bellingham, and they were going to school at Western, and they would keep the house cool because it was expensive, and they had one female roommate, and when they left to go to class, then this one female roommate, who was from Germany, would turn the heat up and then undress, because one of the roommates was her boyfriend. So she would wear very short shorts, very revealing clothing. And my sons, who were not at a party, respect women, would have to ask her to go and get more clothes on. So it's very difficult for a woman to understand a man's mind, because we don't have a man's mind. So it's not just parties. It's not just booze and drugs. It's everyday behavior, and so I just would like to say I really recognize what that man said, and I think he's right on.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to step away from. Not saying that we shouldn't take certain precautions as women to protect ourselves, but really our culture is broken in the sense that we choose to objectify people and sexualize people when we're just bodies. And so our pop culture sends messages that sex sells, and that we get the message across that we can objectify people, we can sexualize people. And I think there's a movement going around right now around like breastfeeding, saying that we shouldn't sexualize maybe somebody's breasts because they're feeding their child, that they're not a sexual object, that they're just doing their motherly duty. So
I think also we're really giving kind of no power to men there also, that they have responsibility for their own actions. So I think that kind of thinking tends to say, like, women have to be responsible for the way that men act. But that is, in my opinion, just not the way that it should be.
I think you're missing the point totally. And you have to get into the mind of a man. And when they see this, I mean, my son had to ask her to please dress more. So he was able to control himself. He didn't do any violence. There was no sexual misbehavior. But she was purposely doing that. And I think young women do that. And it's, we are very sexual, especially when we're younger. So I'm not blaming the victim. I'm saying that women need to be aware of how their lack of dress affects men. That's all I'm saying. And that, there's a time and a place to be very sexy, but you have to pick and choose when that time is. And hopefully you're surrounded by men who will say to you, please, would you put on some more clothes? So you're foisting it back on the man. And I don't like sexual assault at all. I think it's a horrible thing. And I'm not, my sons are not sexual assaulters, but they just happened to express that to me. And they would get really irritated with her because she did it repeatedly. So she was doing it to excite her boyfriend, but the other men in the house didn't want to be excited. They didn't even really like her, but her clothing incited them. So that's all I have to say. So good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that no matter how a woman chooses to dress, that if somebody is in that mindset, somebody is going to objectify them sexually anyways. So regardless if they're walking around in short shorts or they're fully clothed.
Okay, and we were speaking also about resources available. If talked about books and such things. If someone is a victim of sexual assault or violence, what resources do they have available to them?
So we have Women in Safe Homes here in the community, and they have a 24-hour hotline, and that number is 225-9474, and that's 24 hours a day. You can call at any time. It's completely confidential, and so if you're sitting at home late at night and you feel like you need somebody to talk to, you can always call that hotline number. And then we do have the program at Ketchikan Indian Community, the domestic violence program. I'm not always sitting at my desk, but I try to return calls within 24 hours. My number is 228-9228. And so we can help you out. Our program at Ketchikan Indian Community, you don't necessarily have to be a tribal member, because we know that people bounce around these islands a lot. And so, but we can offer some financial help too.
Okay. And you have some events coming up. You mentioned Thursday is the Choose Respect March. When and what time is that? And where do people meet?
So before we get into the Choose Respect March, we actually have an event going on tonight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, at IROC. And if you would like to participate in the American tradition of making a sign to walk with in the Choose Respect March, that's going to be going on from 4:30 to
4 to 6.
4 to 6 tonight, and that there's going to be pizza.
Pizza, and children are welcome, and we have all the supplies for sign making, so you can stop by, make a quick sign, bring your kids, eat some pizza. And the IROC facility is at 2106 Tongass. It's right next to the Tongass Federal Credit Union Home Loan Center, so you'll see the little IROC sign over the door.
Okay. Yeah. So that's tonight?
That's tonight, yeah, from 4 to 6 o'clock at the IROC building. So it should be good time, and anybody in the community is welcome to come, like Erica was saying. Mm-hmm. And then on Thursday, we have the Choose Respect March, which is going to be...
Oh, we're going to meet at the Discovery Center at 6 o'clock or a little before. We'll start marching at 6:15, so we just go basically from the Discovery Center to... either the state building, if it's really rainy and nasty, or outside of the Presbyterian Church, Methodist Church, where First City Homeless Shelters is. So that's an event that's sponsored by First. Women in Safe Homes and First City Homeless Services, KIC, and Aquila. And so we'll march up there. We'll have, you know, some cookies and ice cream and other snacks, and then we'll have different speakers. Just talking about, you know, the problem of domestic violence and sexual assault, kind of where we've been, where we're going, and then we'll also have the opportunity for people to, you know, share their remarks if they would like to, maybe survivor of domestic violence or sexual assault. Mm-hmm. I think we have some dance groups. There'll be quite a few organizations represented there. So it's just a really great way for the community to get out. And one of those ways we're all sort of standing together and saying, like, we want our community to be one that does not accept domestic violence and sexual assault together.
Yeah, and getting out there and just being seen that this is not what our community stands for. And some other communities like Sitka have already done their Choose Respect March, and they had a really good turnout. So I would like to challenge the community to turn out and mm-hmm. let's.
Okay, and do you have any other events planned this month?
So just on the 19th at the library from 6 to 7, we'll be doing that, you know, talking to your teen about sexual assault. But really, I think anybody could come, and we could help, you know, just talk through different conversations. The state sponsors the Talk Now Talk Often, so I'll have those resources. And they're just cards, just, you know, so you can start that conversation with your child and then ways to keep it going. So, like, a lot of times say, like, oh, how was your day at school? And then kind of, like, lose their what. So it helps you learn other ways to keep asking questions, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank
Erica
you.
Paquette from Women in Safe Homes, and also Haley Beard with Ketchikan Indian Community.